What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Surf and Sails podcast, one arm and branch of surfandsails.com, featuring the Surf and Sails Summit coming to you twice this November. Check it out, surfandsails.com. I'm Scott Lees. I'm here with my good friend, Richard Harris. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. It's nice. Like we finally coordinated and communicated a couple of times in the last few days. So it's always good to see you.
Yeah.
So.
Well, recording like 700 podcast episodes in 2 days. We'll do that.
Right. It will. So I hope you're just not sick of me yet. So.
No, I will be finishing your sentences soon before the end of this episode is complete, I think. We're joined today by Candace Tabor, who has been in the training enablement. I don't know what else you want to call it, training, enablement, and development, and learning, all of this stuff that helps people get better at their jobs. She's currently a sales leadership enablement manager at Granicus. Hopefully I said that right. Welcome to the show, Candace.
Yeah, thank you both for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay, my first question right away is, what is sales leadership enablement manager?
Yeah.
That is the current title. I've never heard this specific title before. So tell us what that means.
Yeah. So, I mean, everything I've done with sales training and, you know, learning developments always drifted back to sales. So I've been within sales for the better part of 20 years. So sales leadership enablement is focusing on enabling frontline sales leaders for their roles and working with their teams. So I think the big draw for me in joining and doing this role was that I saw a perpetual need for something that you both talk about too, right? Equipping frontline sales leaders. So Granicus was forward thinking about it with this role and position.
So what do you do though? So to describe that to the audience, because as we go deeper, I want them to understand the perspectives, because like we actually had a conversation yesterday about this with someone else. And so now I want to bring up that conversation in a second, but in your mind, what does that mean when you do those things for people and help them?
A big thing is, you know, if you've the one of the hardest transitions I think is from being an individual seller to being a sales leader, right? It's an interesting transition. If you do a lot of leadership, if you do some leadership development training, a lot of times it's theoretical. It's about these really great leadership concepts. And what you need a lot of times is that practical enabling to make the change, right? Like how you think about doing your job, how you think about the flow of work and spending your time with your reps. So making sure that they have, you know, tools, essentially a lot, you know, from training to job aids to coaching guides, you know, on how you're going to spend time with your reps, that how-to piece. And it really stems from, I was a leader I went from a high performer to a leader early on in my sales career, and I was terrible.
Weren't we all?
I was a terrible seller first and I on a PIP, and then I, you know, went from high performing, and then I went to a sales leader and sucked again. I had to learn not to suck at it.
That's the title of this episode, How to Learn Not to Suck at Sales.
How to learn not how to suck at sales. I think there's a lot of things that you need. And I love, you know, Brene Brown and Simon Sinek, all those great, you know, thought leaders on leadership. But for sales leadership, you know, initially on the front line, what you need is to understand how you can coach and make impact with your meetings and the time that you're going from thing to thing to thing and what your flow of work looks like, right? And how you can be successful and learn how to navigate being successful in your role now that you're split between reps and company objectives.
That's a really good definition. Get real specific here, case by case basis, but let's try to avoid that and give a general answer. If somebody's listening and they're managing a team of reps right now, whether they're 10 SDRs or 10 AEs or whatever.
Yeah.
What would you say is a good rule of thumb in terms of the cadence of coaching and training and development that a manager should provide for their team?
Well, it needs to be weekly for one thing. I think that's good, but it needs to be.
So that's a good baseline. Once a week, at least.
At least, like, you should be in connecting with your reps once a week. I mean, there's daily, but your daily communication is really about building the relationship. Any meeting cadence that you set up, right? Coaching should be happening within it. So I don't think you need a coaching conversation. Coaching should be part of your ecosystem. So what do I mean? Like, if you're managing a team of AEs and you're doing, you know, pipeline progression calls, pipeline generation calls, you should be coaching within those calls. You know, it's not a separate event. It's within the flow of work. Have a
special hour long one-on-one just for coaching.
No. Yeah. No,
this,
you don't.
This like makes my soul happy because I never did that. I never had these like mandatory one-on-one meetings with all the reps and all this kind of stuff. And people would say to me, well, aren't you coaching them? I'd be like, yeah, I'm coaching them literally all day long, every single day in micro moments over and over and over.
That's the key. It's the micro moments. It's building, you know, the environment over event thinking, right? That it's in the flow of work. I'm really, really a stickler on the flow of work. That coaching is not something I step in. Hey, guess what? I'm here. We're coaching now. How does it feel? Does it feel good? Does it feel good? Right? Like, super awkward. But if I'm building the relationship and we're going and I'm asking questions, like a good discovery, then I'm uncovering things for the reps, right? And helping them in the moment, rather than just one, getting information like a checklist. And two, it becomes me demonstrating the behavior that also helps coach the rep too. So I'm hitting it from two angles, right?
So when you say exhibiting the behavior, does that mean in a role play, or does it mean you getting on the phone and doing it too? Like letting them listening to your calls or sitting next to you? What's your advice on that?
So it's both, like it's both. Scott, one of the things you said recently that I loved and I was going to hit repost on was, I don't ask people to go where I'm not willing to go. I'm the same person in that, in my fierce belief in that. So when I was when I had a team of BDRs, I would record calls and I would let them coach me on my calls.
Right.
And also so that they understood it, right, at a new level with the teach back. So it's both, right? It's me willing to get in and have them evaluate me. And it's also me demonstrating the behavior in our conversations, like a good discovery, right? Asking questions instead of having all the answers.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting point. Leadership is about, as much about asking questions as it is having the answers, right? I think that's a really valid point across the board. Why do you think, and I mean, I've experienced it, you admitted to it. Why do you think we still have this problem that managers are just so bad at managing, particularly frontline managers and new frontline managers? Like this has been on, you know, I made the joke yesterday, this has been going on since Scott was in middle school and I was in sales management, right? Like it's the true, you know, it's true. Like this is always, why is this still a problem? Or is it just the go fast at all costs startup sales ecosystem we live in and they don't care about that?
No, it's a people problem. So, you know, elephant in the room, have I been in tech as long as other people? No, I've had more exposure. Like my sales background is pretty eclectic, few, you know, industries, but the patterns are the same. It's people problems. And a big part of that is people have a worldview, a belief system, and a lived experience. And when you go into leading, you think you're going to jump in there with yours, and that's everybody else's. And so you're just doing stuff if you don't have the tools to think otherwise, kind of going on just instinct, right? Or, you know,
we have these conversations. Yeah. Like we have this conversation. I could have this conversation with CEOs and founders and VCs, and we all agree to this. Yet nobody makes the change.
Humans are deathly afraid of change and yet they're deathly afraid of staying the same. Like we people a little too hard sometimes, you know? And so that's why we keep having these conversations, because we get in it and we go, but I'm going to be different and I'm going to do it my way. And then my way goes, I need some help. I need some enablement. I need to think about this differently. I need to learn.
One of the things that I'm thinking as I'm listening to you talk is, it's not just the delivery of training or the material or providing the space and opportunity for that stuff. Because a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
But then they leave and they think, oh, Candace and Richard now know exactly what I was trying to communicate. And we don't test for the absorption of the information. We don't actually test the learning, right? So you go to a training by Richard, and the assumption is that you know everything Richard was talking about, and there's no follow-up with it. So I've always been...
Hold on, let's just make sure people who hire me know that I do have a reinforcement program, just so you know. just so people know, I've solved that problem. But
beyond the reinforcement program, I've always been a fan of testing. Literally like creating quizzes like you're in school, or like mm-hmm. I'm a teacher, and making sure people actually comprehend and understood and absorb the material. Is that something that is a part of your strategy as you go through enablement? And if not, do you think I'm crazy to put something like that in place?
No, I don't think you're crazy. I think there's not one way of testing, right? So I think you have to have a few things. You can have the quizzes, and I think you can have, you know, that piece, but then you have to be willing to apply it, right? Practical application. And I think a lot of the quizzing that needs to happen in sales leadership, for instance, is about demonstrating competency. And great, okay, you got the quiz and you can test, because listen, tech has a lot of really smart people that I think can take a quiz well. But getting in with the people arena, that's the hard part. Because yeah,
I should rephrase the word quiz, because it's like, the way that I've done it is like, okay, there's a written quiz on this. There's an oral quiz on this. There's a live test of application of how to run the demo. So there's different modalities of quizzing.
We're saying something very similar. Yeah. It's about demonstrating the competency, right? Like in action and quizzing multiple ways, right? Because you want to, one, nobody, you know, learns the same. You want to make sure that you're reaching people where they are and giving them opportunity to demonstrate how they need to do it, demonstrate how it applies. And you need to make sure that they're also getting the core of the information. And it's you also learning to make sure that your content's good and that you're getting the objectives across, right? In terms of, ooh, maybe I need to pull this back here and just focus on this micro subject here, right? And, you know, build on this concept later. So it's really two-way.
What do you
think? I always say it's a learning exchange.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest leap that's overmissed, or that is missed, when someone goes from performer to manager? And I don't mean the part where it's like, oh, it was a good rep and they became a bad manager, right? Like, and to your point, it could be some of this understanding how to coach and what to coach and how to quiz and what to, like, that could be all part of it. If I'm getting promoted as a manager, what are the first three things I need to think about doing if I'm going from rep to manager? And I'll even say within the same organization, because it's different, because now all of a sudden you're managing your friends.
Yeah. I'm going to say something that probably most wouldn't consider, but the first thing I'm going to say is you have to understand bias.
Ooh, tell me more. That's good.
Well, you have to understand, like going back to my statement about everybody has a worldview, a belief system, and a lived experience, you're typically going to come in and you just learn how to play the game really well as an individual player. But now you're jumping to coach and you've got to figure out how to take all your different, friends, teammates, as they were, and help them play the game better, right? And I think the first way to even understand that is going, how you played it may not be the best way to scale playing it, right? Or the best way to reach, you know, person A. And I think that's the first reality check that needs to happen, is unpacking that you're going to have natural tendencies to think that everybody thinks like you do, because we do it as humans. And you got to get that unchecked real fast.
So how do you, this is great, because I have this challenge, right? Like, and I think some of it's because I'm such a tactical person. I dive into tactics faster than I do strategy. And I figure out strategy later, right? I sort of do it backwards. Where do I go to learn? How do I go to figure out, okay, this is my style, this is someone else's style, right? I mean, am I defaulting to the, you know, the challenger rep, right? You got the lone wolves and you got the challenger and you got this kind of stuff, or, you know, is there something, for lack of a better phrase, more meaningful or deeper about that? Like, I like how you're positioning all this stuff at a very human level, not at this like sales world level language we speak.
Yeah, well, we're human first, right? And so, and I think with five generations present in the workforce right now, you have generations up and coming asking really hard questions and good questions about leadership. So I think that getting back to the human to human piece is really essential. And I think it's also really simple in terms of, once you, you know, have bias training, whether your company provides it, you know, there's lots of great resources. We have access to a lot of, you know, concepts like these that you can quickly unpack. It's really having a conversation with people and being really direct. Like, I don't want to, like, how do you receive feedback? Like, asking hard questions to help uncover how you can, you know, coach with them, help them play better. And then the second part of that, though, is not just asking for how they want to receive it, but what you're agreeing to now is a partnership agreement. I think that's something that's really important. Okay, this is what we've agreed to in our interactions together, and we're now going to have collaborative accountability to what we agreed to.
I like that, collaborative accountability. I got one more question and I'll let Scott ask something. And it just sort of dawned on me as I'm listening to you. You know, we talk all the time about ramp time for reps.
Yeah.
Should new managers have a ramp time? And what would be included in that ramp time?
It's a really good question.
There's my new business, Scott. Don't steal it.
I think when you're looking at new managers who are going into it, one, you know, sales is great because we're confident, you know, like, I think we're confident people culturally in sales, right? So we go into it, we're ready to tackle it. But I think the ramp piece is really about how quickly you understand that they're different from you and how quickly you need to get a point of view about how you're going to lead, understanding what they need from you and getting those agreements in place. And then what are, you know, the metrics that are currently in place where you're working, right? Because all of those things are the same, like primarily the same controllables at each company, right? We're looking at, you know, close rates and, or win rates and, you know, pipe generation, all those things. But then what does that mean? And then go back to focusing on like the behaviors and the strategies and working with that individual once you come to your agreements. I think you should know pretty quickly if somebody can be adept in those things, like within a quarter. Like, you should be able to have a quarter under your belt to say, I can really do this and I'm open to learning to do it well, or this isn't, people leadership within sales is not for me.
Right.
I think people get a quarter usually. Whether you get a second quarter, a third and a fourth starts to become the big question. You said something a little bit earlier about, you know, asking people how they receive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
How many people actually respond to that honestly? I have never asked that question to somebody and not heard some variation of, oh, really? Well, I love to get feedback. I'm super coachable, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Everybody says that. Nobody ever looks you in the eye dead honest and says, well, Candace, I'm pretty defensive, actually.
And, yeah.
I tend to lash out a little bit if I feel cornered. And mm-hmm. I will come up with three or four examples of what I do or did that you're saying I didn't do. So what are you going to do about that? Nobody ever answers honestly like that.
Yeah. It'd be great if they did.
So my thing is, like, what is the value of asking a question that I think nobody is going to respond to honestly?
Yeah, I think that's a good pressure test, right? And so I think it's going back to the agreement of, this is what we're agreeing to. This is the feedback you wanted to receive. Here's what we have in place, right? We have a compass of how we're navigating this relationship, and we have collaborative accountability. And so then on our first pressure testing, because there's always pressure at some point that's going to pressure test what character comes out. And so it's up to you as the sales leader to go, we agreed on this. This is how you're responding. And that's okay, but what are we going to do about this right now, right? Because here's what we control. Here's what we can't. Here's what we agreed to. How are we going to move forward? And so again, it's that back and forth of, how are we going to navigate this? Because I do want you to be successful, but that also requires uncomfortable conversations and honesty. And that's always my prep with people. I'm really, I'm okay with people not liking me as a person because my worth is intact, right? I'm not in this to be liked. I'm in this to help us get to a goal. And I think that's a sticking point for some people, is they focus in on not being liked, and then they're not being direct and they're not being clear, right? And being clear is far more compassionate in leadership than wanting to just be right and not have some sort of tension or conflict that you can actively work through.
Go ahead, Richard. I can see your wheels
spinning. No, I think, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, this is all familiar to, in my mind, feels very similar, I should say, to Radical Candor, which I'm sure Candace has read, you know, more than once. and there's this part that I've always, Scott, you know me, there's a part between, you know, radical candor being positive and radical candor mean you're an asshole. And Scott, you know where I sort of gravitate towards, you know, it's probably the latter more than the former. And I think that's a part that people struggle with, right? And is that I don't know how to do it. I think I know how to do it. I think I know how I would want it done, but it loses its, it loses its way between my brain and my mouth of when I try to articulate it with people. Yeah. If that makes sense. So
yeah.
I think that's the skill that Candace is hitting on that we aren't taught, and you know, kind of goes back to this thought I had about ramp time for managers. Because nobody's ever taught you to slow down mm-hmm. in sales, right? You're always taught to speed up. Mm-hmm. You're never taught to slow down. And management oftentimes is about having to slow it down for in order to speed up. So anyway,
Richard. Going to your point though about how we're not taught how to do that. I think mm-hmm. we're not taught how to have conversations that are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you're gonna get ghosted or you're not gonna be liked or this, that, whatever. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate when I was sucking so hard as mm-hmm. a sales leader that I had a performance coach come in and say, do you want to have a real conversation? And I said, sure. Mm-hmm. So to your point, Scott, I said, sure. And she's like, do you want feedback? And I was like, sure. She started giving me the feedback and I was like, well, and I started getting defensive and
started litigating like I was talking about.
I was like, maybe I missed my calling as a lawyer. And she was like, hey, we agreed to this, right? And so I'm giving you some feedback. Like, you're not doing well as a leader right now, and you don't have the respect of your team. And I'm like, oh, I knew they didn't like me. And she goes, no, doesn't even matter if they like you. She's like, they don't respect you. And I was like, oof. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, then we went on and she's like, but you could be a great manager. Like, you could be a great leader. Do you want to be? I was like, yeah, because this sucks and this feels terrible. She's like, so you got to do the work. And then her and I went on, a mentorship journey that changed the trajectory for me. But I was me willing to do the work. But I think the point is, a lot of environments reinforce bias and preference, right? And not being able to have hard conversations without it being, or uncomfortable conversations without it being, some kind of political move or so-and-so said this, instead of just like, let's sit here and be uncomfortable and work through this, because once we're on the other side of this, growth is going to happen and it's going to feel way better.
I think Richard's really good at this, and I would label myself at the CRAN stage of evolution.
There it is.
Dealing with feedback.
Skill level crayon.
I am not the best at this. I'm not. My initial reaction is 100% Sicilian hot-bloodedness starts to come to the surface. And then I have to like step away and process what I just heard and think about it. Like, I'm not good in the moment of hearing difficult feedback or having difficult conversations that I didn't initiate.
Mm-hmm.
Then I walk away and I come back and I'm like, okay, I understand what she meant. I understand what he was saying. I think they're right. And, you know, Richard will probably tell you that means I'm fucking exhausting to deal with, because you have to have this like initial battle. And then later on, I'll be like, okay, you were right. I'm going to work on this. So yeah, not the best at it. I think it's a really good discussion point for us that we've been having. So it's great.
Yeah. This has been very different than anything I think we've had in a long time, in terms of like talking about leadership and management and all that kind of stuff. So I'm super glad that we've had this conversation. We kind of got to sort of move it over to wrapping it up. But before we do, Candace, question for us, anything you'd like to ask us, something we can help you out with, anything we can do?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, you both have been in sales a long time too. When you look at, we know this is continuing to be a problem, like you said, when you think about what you can do for a first time sales leader and what they should know, what would each of you say is most important?
I wrote a whole book about this. If anybody wants to check it out, it's called From Rep to Manager, co-wrote mm-hmm. it with Ryan Walker. You go first, Richard.
I kind of space. So the question is, what would advice would I give?
That's Richard's advice.
I was waiting right for there. Scott to, I was waiting for Scott to go first so I could figure out my
answer.
Well,
I'll go first then.
Yes.
Right. What are some things? I mean, the first thing is you have to, and we've already talked about this, but you have to find a way to make an impact on people every single day through some type of coaching. Sometimes it's tactical coaching, like, hey, you know, you're going after the wrong account. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a soft skill coaching, like Candace, you're shouting on your demos, let's lower your voice a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a life skill coaching, like, okay, you have this like credit card debt problem. I have some ideas for you of how we can work around it, right? All of these things are helping somebody in theory become a better version of themselves and therefore be able to be more productive, which helps them, helps you, helps the company. So find a way to make an impact with everybody on your team every single day. And it does not require 60-minute meetings to do so. That's number one. Number two, lean into the part of you that derives more pleasure and joy, whatever you want to call it, from helping other people succeed more than yourself succeeding. You have to become extremely selfless. It's not about you. It's not about your recognition. It's not about your wins or your paycheck. It's about, did I help these 10 people today get what they want? All day, every day, the question you ask yourself is, what is the blocker in front of Candace and Richard, and how do I remove it? And if you just live by those two kind of guiding principles, I think the rest of the job starts to become very easy.
So are those guiding principles, or is that your belief system? Because something I say is actions are the motions of belief, right? And so those are two things that you feel really strongly about that you've built, you know, wrote books and built businesses around.
So they're, say that again. I have to process this. You said it.
Yeah. Are they principles, or is it a belief system? Right.
Well, what's the difference between a principle and a belief system?
So what I would say is, like,
getting a little defensive there, aren't you, Scott?
I told you I suck at that.
Well, I think there is principle to them, 1,000%. But what I'm getting at with the belief system is, I think what makes both of you effective and why people are drawn to you is because of everything that you've built is predicated on a belief system you have about sales and being successful because of your lived experience, your worldview, and what you've seen be successful, right? So the behaviors over time that have been shown. The reason why I just kind of, you know, poke at that a little bit is something we're so passionate about makes us more effective. And so I think you're really clear on your belief system. And going back to what I said in the beginning is that that's how you have to figure out really quickly what kind of leader you're going to be, by understanding yours.
Hmm. Well, like I said, I will now have to reflect on this. About the difference between the two. Richard, you've stalled long enough.
Yeah. I'm still trying to remember what the original question was. I'm in a zone at the moment.
Actually, Richard, I'll give you a different question if you want.
Thank you. Give him a softball. Bail him out.
Since you zoned out at that one and you just went somewhere else, like, I'll give you a different one. What would you like to, like, see stop happening, right? Because we've talked about, like, some things that, why are we still having these problems? What would you like to see stop happening when it comes to, you know, either promoting leaders or how they're set up for success when it comes to sales leadership? Like, what do you want to see stop happening?
I want to, you know, I say this all the time. I want people to stop smoking the hopium, right? And I want goals to be realistic. I want leaders to understand that, you know, you're way better off when 80% of your sales team hits quota and you reduce turnover than trying to have a ridiculous, audacious goal and only 30% of your team hits quota and nobody's happy and there's high turnover and you still don't hit your quota overall. And then there's just more pressure. That's what I want. I want, you know, and I say this a lot, I want a little bit more humanity into the sales world. Right. And stop creating sales on a spreadsheet in terms of the ideation can be on a spreadsheet. The execution is not on a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's a big piece, which is why I really enjoyed this conversation, because we're talking about the execution side of stuff. Right. In a way that we all need to do more of. You know, in this instance, it's like, oh, this was a really good reminder. I could hear people listening to this. Oh, this was a great reminder. Which then tells me that it's also easy to forget, because you already forgot it 6 other times. So what are you going to do? So I think that's the piece that I wish would stop happening, is people just doing hopium dreams, right?
Yeah. Well, so it's like we do this, like doctors do this thing and they sign, you know, this Hippocratic oath, do no harm. Mm-hmm. But we don't think about the depth of that in leadership when we have now people we're responsible for. And so people matter. And first you need to take that seriously. How are you doing the people part now that they report to you?
Totally agree. Totally agree. Candace, this has been awesome. Thank you so much. I'm glad you know, you and I sort of got to know each other very quickly on LinkedIn with a little banter back and forth around my book launch. And I was like, oh, Candace could be good on here. And absolutely, this has been a fabulous conversation. So thank you so much.
No, thank you both. I absolutely appreciate being invited to your space and having me on.
Thanks so much. Like, and where can people reach out to you? Is LinkedIn a good place for people to find?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I finally stopped like side-eyeing LinkedIn since, you know, I'm feeling some sort of way. I've fully embraced LinkedIn, so LinkedIn's fine.
Right. Perfect. Candace Taper, everybody. We'll see you next time on the Surf and Sales podcast.
All right. Thanks, guys.